Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. It's the hottest balls edition of the pod. You've been racing around the city. I've been racing around the city. I imagine you were very happy when you walked in that the air conditioning is fully working here.
I love that feeling when your body, you can feel it literally decompressing when you walk into an air conditioned room after being in the heat, especially downtown in Toronto, because the asphalt and there's not a lot of airflow. You're down here by the lake.
Yeah.
So you do get more air down here. It does come on off the lake, and that's nice. You know, Matt, it's funny. I was thinking about something. I went to the washroom here, and you've got a little piece of folk art up on your wall. Mm-hmm. And it says, Malt was the magic.
It's Matt, like a, Matt was the magic.
Well, it says Malt was the magic if you look at it carefully.
Oh.
Because of the way the second T, or the T is crossed, it looks like two T's. So the L becomes a de facto T, hence Matt was the magic. And I thought, that's probably not the first time that alcohol has transformed Matt into magic.
That is true. You know, alcohol transforms Matt into a kaleidoscope of different things.
I was also thinking to myself how nice it is that your girlfriend Amy put that up, because she probably thought, oh, that's so sweet. Matt's magic.
Yeah.
Whereas in my family, my wife and daughter, they're planning to do something really nice for Father's Day.
What did they do, Bob?
No, they're planning.
Oh, that's for next year.
I don't
year.
Think they know it passed.
And by the way, thank you for recognizing that. As much as I like to play the role of the braggart or whatever, the idea that I would purchase and put up a Matt is the magic thing is 100% against anything I would do.
Next to Landsberg, we don't know anyone in our circle who has more to brag about but does it less than you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's why people go with the wine podcast. Oh, have you gotten sponsors? I'm like, the idea of selling me, you know when I'm going for sponsors is when Bell has ended all radio. You know, like, hey, Rogers, oh, what you're doing there? Oh, hold my beer. Like, until then, I ain't looking for sponsors.
I was a little disappointed to see in Vancouver it shut down. It's tough to see a big market like that without a sports radio station. Sports radio is special. It is a community thing in the way that very few other mainstream projects are. It's a bit like sports is super local. Mm-hmm. And the radio allows you a place to hang out with your community. And honestly, like, it's not needed, right?
No.
Like, it's not like the weather report, although how much do you really need that either? But it's needed in the sense that it makes your life so much more fun. It's needed that way.
It bonds people together. And let's just get it out of the way. We could not be more biased on this topic. Moving on.
Well, we should also explain that Rogers cut a whole bunch of stations across the country, and one of them was 590 AM, the sports station in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So I think they shut down the Calgary station too, right?
They did. I think there's around 200 jobs that were gone. And so, yeah, so like these major markets with the Canucks or the Flames, the games are going to be played on some rock station. I'm sorry, it's just not the same. And it's not just about community and you feel a sense of ownership. And it's not just about sports. You know, when I'm doing the show, if I start talking about traffic or trying to get to a Leafs game and bitching about the Go or Subway or TTC or the mayor or the premier or the gardener being shut down, people react to that as much as they do sports. I can do weather, traffic, restaurants, and everyone jumps onto that as much as they do the Raptors or Jose Bautista or something like that.
The best way I can describe what it can do for a whole city is kind of what like having a kid does for your interest in school. Mm. How much between the ages of 20 and 35 do most people think about school? Probably not that much. And then you suddenly have a kid and your kid's in school and you think about it all the time.
Yeah.
I feel that way about the community. Is this is something that lets you think about being in a community all the time by proxy through your sports team. And it's a great thing to point out, Matt, is, you know, that's how you talk about traffic. And that's how you talk about the frustration of the 905 versus the 416 and all that. Like, why does Joe from Woodbridge work? Mm-hmm. Because we all know what that means.
We know what Joe from Woodbridge looks like and sounds like.
We, you know what? I've got seven of them in my family now.
Oh, yeah. And it's a fun, like Mike Richards used to always rip on Oshawa and everyone knew what that meant. And, you know, if you shit on Rosedale or the Bridle Path, we all know what that means.
And when you take that out of people's lives, then it doesn't really matter where they live. It's like living inside a big box store. These are the things that make your community, and if it belongs to you and you feel part of it, you're going to fight for it differently. I'm not trying to turn this into a political thing. This is just a quality of life thing. You are when you are more engaged in where you live, the quality of life goes up. End of story. So I look at this not as just a loss in the media. I look at this not just a loss in the sports, select little area of the media. It's a loss for Toronto because we became a little, or a loss for Vancouver and Calgary, I should say. We become a little less, well, they become a little less who they are. And I'm afraid that it's going to happen here, but I don't think it will because TSN backs you guys so much.
Yeah, well, you hope so, but you never know. I feel like I'm at least good till October, till the next Princess Margaret Cancer Center show. So I know I've got that. Here would be a hyper-local. Apologies for anyone listening, not in the Toronto area. You don't know Toronto. The Brunswick House closed and it was replaced with a box drugstore. Mm-hmm. I don't need the Brunswick House. In fact, when the Brunswick House ended, it had been years since I'd been there, and it'd be kind of creepy if I ever went in again. But I just hated that it wasn't there for every generation of 19 to 31-year-olds to go there. And because we all had our experiences with the Brunswick House. And now it's just where you go for gum.
We blame people for not being engaged in their community, going out and doing more the way we were. We had our hangouts and our spots. But if you don't have places to go, it's a lot harder to do that. My daughter says all the time, she said to me the other day something so heartbreaking. She said, I wish I could have a Stranger Things summer, but nobody wants to get on their bike.
Oh, that's a horrible line. That stinks. That would be heartbreaking for you
it
as well.
It was because the silly act of being on our bikes in the summer and just riding around. Like, what are you doing?
I don't know.
Going out on my bike.
Yeah.
And you figure it out as you go along. And you just develop so much as a person. And you're connected to your day and your neighborhood differently. So, yeah, I see this in that context. Sad for everyone who lost their jobs. And sad for everyone who's a little less part of their community today.
Yeah. And you just hate hearing and seeing people losing their jobs. And also, you hate, the idea of media being reduced, with the exception, of course, of Pablo Torre Finds Out. Fuck that guy and all the incredible work that he has done. He's a credit. He's a testament to journalism can work and that you can make a living out of it. I just wish he was investigating. Go investigate the Kachucks. You know? go investigate
I
them.
Actually have a great story for him.
Oh, yeah?
I think he should investigate MAGA in hockey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that would be fascinating.
I think it would be as well. Just anything. Anything but Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, I mean, by everything I've heard, eventually the deal will get done and there's not going to be a crazy, it's not going to impact the Raptors too much. I hope that's true.
He's going to get suspended. Well, let's say this. Let's do this. How about this?
Okay.
It's the last regularly scheduled show of the summer for us. We'll probably do a couple between now and when football starts up again. But it won't necessarily be regular because you're traveling, I'm traveling.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about, why don't we do a 2026 year in review in Toronto so far?
Love it.
Where we can just talk about what it was like when the year started and where we are now. And this feels like a good place to jump in because as we talk about the Raptors, they felt like kind of the city's biggest feel-good story. And this really fucked it up. Like the idea that the Kawhi deal would somehow, one, it's on hold for sure, but that it could somehow be nullified, rescinded. Like it leaves you wondering, where are we after that? So set us up, Matt. Set us up.
I think in the end, we'll be okay. And I think whatever happens to Kawhi, we'll look at that as that's LA Clipper Kawhi. That's not me. That's not Toronto Kawhi. That's a different version. You know, it's like dating someone who had a crazy past. And you're like, that was when she was younger. Now everything is going to be a little bit different. We're good at compartmentalizing as sports fans. So I think we'll do that. My biggest concern is if it doesn't happen, beyond us feeling bad because the ceiling for the Raptors now gets smaller, is I feel so bad for Brandon Ingram. It's like, what? You're back? Boo. It's like, well, wait, I'm an all-star team with you guys. I know I stunk in the playoffs, but every Maple Leaf stinks in the playoffs. Why are you getting on my case? Because it's like we had Kawhi, and then if Brandon Ingram comes back, that's going to be a tough comparison.
So there's someone I feel bad for more, but that's a good one to start because there have been 1,000 articles written about how this team wasn't going anywhere with Brandon Ingram. And you have to go back to that. And the rest of the team now has to look at him and think, were they right? They probably know one way or the other. But also, how do you talk to the guy now? God, he's going to be so pissed, which is why my number one guy to feel sorry for is actually Darko. Darko has to manage that team because, you know, if Brandon Ingram comes in, it's going to be like Vince in the last 3 months of his stay here. You thought he was like
checked out
before?
Yeah.
Wait till you see this.
It definitely puts a monkey wrench in this summer of feel good for the Raptors. If we do year in review, it was an ascension for them. It was Colin Murray Boyles. Oh, Scotty Barnes in the playoffs. Oh, I guess we can view this team with a little more optimism than what we did during even the regular season, which was a really good regular season. So I think that if I was going to do the year in review for the Raptors in a couple sentences, that would be the quick synopsis.
I would agree, although I think we all feel they've probably found their ceiling and they're not going to be much better than this unless the Kawhi deal is done.
Yeah.
And then we don't know. But we assume that they'll be better, at least a round or two in the playoffs better. Kawhi's healthy, maybe more. Who knows? I think it's really a way to backdoor into the MLSE conversation.
Yeah.
Because so many of the questions around the Kawhi deal is, how did we get here? I thought this deal was done. 9 days after the free agency period starts, now you announce it after the trade has been done and both teams have basically just waiting for the league to sign off. And then the league says, ho, wait a minute. And it makes you wonder how MLSE was engaged in this process. What did they know? What did they need to know about it? Because Pablo Torre is reporting that the Raptors were told that if there was a punishment to Kawhi, it would be on their watch and not the Clippers' watch.
Which is insane.
Well, yes, but no, because if it's a suspension, you have to just serve it in time.
Oh, yeah, no, if it's a suspension, yes. I'm just saying if it was anything else.
I don't think they
else.
Should have to pay their fines.
Yeah, yeah.
But, when he got... I was assuming Kawhi was going to get 25 to 50 games. If that's true, then the Raptors obviously traded knowing that, right? Or at least it would be possible. But I think that the organization's going to take a public shit-kicking for it. Like, if he sits out 30, 40 games because of a suspension, and they gave up 2 firsts and 2 seconds, which on its own level, people said, was a pretty good haul for the Clippers. But if you're missing almost an entire full season, or at least a half a full season as well, that deal starts looking less and less good.
It will be curious where the wrath goes towards if there is a significant suspension for Kawhi. Because I look at it the other way. I look at it, this all falls on the NBA. This falls on Adam Silver. Someone pointed out the Warren Commission. You know, the one who investigate the murder of a president. That took 10 months before they came out with their conclusions, which feels a little inconclusive. And this is now entering month 11. How has this taken so long?
Yeah, Matt, I don't think you're appreciating just how rich Steve Ballmer is.
That goes to the point. I think so much of this is the NBA is like, fuck, we don't want to punish that guy because of A, of all the money, B, he is such a great owner to have because he's doing things that all leagues love. He built a fancy new arena.
He built it.
And that's the point. Self-financed. You want good PR? Your billionaire owner doesn't ask for taxpayer money to build their new stadium with a retractable roof. And that's what Steve Ballmer's done. Somebody, Steve Ballmer is, if you had a home and you were renting out for tenants, Steve Ballmer would be the perfect tenant.
Well, that is true. That is true. The problem becomes the history of this as well, because the Raptors are not a neutral party in this story. They were the first aggrieved party.
Yeah.
2018, they're vying for his services, Kawhi's services, and Uncle Dennis, and this is all reported now.
Mm-hmm. By the way, it was 19.
Okay, 2019.
Important. One person will be listening going, it's 19. So I just...
And he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
It was apparent, like Kawhi's team, Uncle Dennis, came to the Raptors and said, we want to own something. We don't want to do anything for it. And basically present them a case of, cap circumvention. And the Raptors said, we're not going to do that. And the Lakers, too, apparently in that conversation they had with the Lakers, same thing came up. They winds up signing with the Clippers, and exactly the thing that they said they wanted was what the Clippers are being investigated for. That the Raptors said they would not do because of league rules, lost the guy that they wanted, the team cheated to get him, then we get him back at a high price and have to pay the fucking penalty for the crime he committed to not come here. That's not going to look so good for MLSC around the league. They're kind of, it's starting to feel like one of those porn videos, like those cuck videos, where the guy has to watch.
Uh-huh.
This is turning into the cuck video of the NBA.
I forget who was telling this joke that the hotel chair is the cuck chair. I heard that.
Have you ever worked at a hotel desk?
I have never worked at a hotel
desk. Nobody's ever worked at a hotel desk.
No, no. That seems like a difficult job.
You know
job.
What it is? It's a very, very big key holder.
Yeah. That's true. Well, yeah, it
that's
is.
That's where you put your stuff.
Yeah, that's where. So getting.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's what I'm hoping for. Because you're right. If everything you laid out there happens, it makes MLSC look horrible and stupid. But also depends, what did they know? What did the NBA tell them? Has the NBA told them, listen, guys, you're going to have to sweat it out for a week or so in July, and don't worry.
It'll go away.
It'll go away. I think the best case scenario is, I don't know, you take some future draft picks away from the Clippers. You find them the maximum amount of money. You maybe draft lottery. If someone's got to get whacked, it's Lawrence Frank. Mm-hmm. It's Lawrence Frank. He's the one that's got to go down. He's got to be the one, you know, like at the end of Casino, so that it'll be him that's going to take the punishment.
It's like in the 2008 credit crisis, the one Swiss banker who went to jail, because apparently he was behind everything.
I was thinking the same thing right near the end of The Big Short.
Is the one guy.
The one guy, yeah, that went down.
So Pablo Torre is kind of the best authority on this, I think. So when he says stuff, you tend to believe it. And what he is saying is the Raptors were told, if something happens, you're on the hook for it. And if they were told this and made that deal,
they look horrible.
They look horrible. Yeah. Now, it's possible they thought there was going to be no time served, and they didn't know one way or the other. And Pablo Torre asked a very important question, which is, what changed between the 1st of July and the 8th of July that suddenly they came out and had to say this deal is on hold? Because they made no whisper of that in the last, you know, number of days. Suddenly they did. Why?
Yeah.
My guess is they've decided they're going to suspend him, and the number is pretty big. And they didn't know that before. And how they didn't know that before is a fireable offense for Adam Silver. That's a fucking joke. Like, that is a fucking sloppy joke, if that's true. But he's not going to fire himself. So, you know.
Yeah, he looks. The thing is, everyone looks bad. No one looks good here.
It's true.
You know, there are no winners in this. It's just, we're figuring out who's the biggest loser. That's kind of where we're at with this.
I worry about our boy Keith in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's done his damnedest to try and make the Leafs look like less of a laughingstock, which they were. It was coming back to me through multiple channels. People around the league are laughing at the Leafs and how shit a job they've done at running things. But the Raptors, at least, were on the way up. The decision to not have a president for any of these teams continues to haunt that organization. Because you'd like to believe this is something Masai would never have done.
And you'd like to believe if Masai and Larry Tannenbaum were still there, it wouldn't happen. Larry Tannenbaum, head of the Board of Governors.
Great point.
So much impact in the NBA that it wouldn't happen.
This is the new MLSE that doesn't have Larry Tannenbaum, that decided Masai was fine. Like, you could just get rid of a guy like that. We're not even a year out. And it's a fucking train wreck.
So the basically the new MLSC is like new Coke. It's kind of what you're saying.
It's new Coke.
Yeah. That's such a dated reference.
No, but it's such a good one.
Oh, God. Yeah. So that's where we are there. By the way, side note just about Masai. When the Kyle Lowry, when they saw, you know, they did the whole retirement thing, press conference, signed him for a day. And it was really nice. I remember watching it and I had two thoughts. One was, I really wish Masai Ujiri was here.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the relationship they had, the ups and downs and how they grew in their relationship. And during the finals, when that stupid fucking security guard was trying to keep Masai away, it was Kyle Lowry that brought him in, made sure he was on the court. I really wish Masai Ujiri was there.
It's such a great point. And the fact that we all know, it's never been denied, that Masai basically pulled Kyle into his office and said, you have a choice. You can either have a great career or you can be out of the league in a couple years. And it all comes down to your attitude.
Yep.
And guys like you get shuffled out of the league all the time. And the fact that he took that, and it's just such a nice story. Like, it must have been a painful encounter for all sides. But a guy with a Hall of Fame career basically came down to someone caring enough to sit him down and not just treat him like an asset, but treat him like a grown man and say, here are your choices. It's up to you to make one. And the guy made the right one. That's a good story.
It really is. It's one of the best Toronto sports stories. It's right up there with the Roy Halladay reinvention, from coming in, having a near no hitter, then like the next year setting a MLB record for the highest ERA. And then 3 years later, he wins the Cy Young.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it's not like sports, you know, it's so transactional and everyone's moving around all the time. It's more often than not that you have the stories like the Al Leiters. If you remember Al Leiter, he had a blister problem. He was a Jays pitcher. He went down. They rehabbed him. He came back, kind of saved his career. And as soon as he could, he got the fuck out of Toronto and went to the Mets. It's really hard to feel good about that story if you're a Toronto fan.
That's one of those moments when you watch Moneyball and Brad Pitt says, how can you not be romantic about this game? I don't know, Brad. I think I found a way, Brad.
Or someone needs to be rehabbed and it goes the way of Alex Manoa. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
This was a story of someone who had promise, was lost, found themselves, and then rededicated themselves to the place where they found themselves. It's exactly what you want to see. Yeah. I don't think Kyle Lowry's the greatest Raptor of all time. Personally, I think it's DeMar. Because DeMar came in at a time where it was very hard to be an enthusiastic Raptor. And when he said after Chris Bosh got traded, well, he didn't get traded, he left, don't worry, I got this, everyone kind of rolled their eyes, but it was true. He became the center point of the franchise, and it kind of saved an entire generation of basketball here.
He'll go down, we could do a podcast, more underrated Toronto athlete, DeMar DeRozan or Carlos Delgado.
Ooh, that's a really good comparison. Yeah, like, no. We're not going to remember them as great, mm-hmm. even though they were. Like, DeMar DeRozan had the challenge of being excellent at something that no one cares about.
Yeah.
Terrific mid-range game. Oh, lovely. Is that like Jim Tomey's getting to 600 home runs with 20 a year for 40 years?
Nope. No, it does not, Bob. Now, I still would have Kyle Lowry number one. I think you could say that DeMar DeRozan is the most admirable Toronto Raptor, but then we're just quibbling on adjectives, which actually something that is what we do this time of year in sports radio is we just quibble. I think he's elite. Yeah, no, okay. He's great. He's right. Not elite.
Well, let me get a thesaurus here. Okay, so yeah. According to Merriam-Webster,
yeah.
Elite.
Yeah. And welcome adjective. Back to Wednesday edition, late July.
The reason why I go with DeMar is that emotional stuff, though. Uh-huh. I think Kyle probably had the greater career, and certainly because he was here for the championship. It's not DeMar's fault, but it is a factor. And that Kyle was a key contributor to it. It's a factor, obviously. But their friendship was the best thing in Toronto sports for a long time.
Yeah.
The stories of them going out of the hotel at 3 in the morning and walking up to a drive-thru and ordering burgers at 3 a.m. Like, it just sounded like college kids who were having a blast. The fact that Kyle was so upset when DeMar was traded... Like, who does that in sports?
It's so much rarer. It's so much, yeah. Put it this way. Kyle Lowry, his reaction with DeMar DeRozan gone, certainly a lot higher than Jason Tatum when Jaylen Brown was gone. Oh, no. Oh, Brown's no. gone. Oh, whatever. Oh, you know, like, completely different.
Oh, you mean that guy whose favorite season was the one where I was hurt?
Yeah. Jesus. The other real quick thought I had, because all roads must lead back to the Maple Leafs, as it has been written. Do you think there'll be any Maple Leaf that has that press conference that Kyle Lowry had?
That's a great question. We keep hoping it'll happen. I don't think it'll be the only one who had a chance out of this kind of leafy past 10 years was Morgan Riley. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't good enough.
Yep.
And that's not a knock on Morgan Riley. It's just he never became like a key contributor. Had they won a... Because Morgan Riley had the stuff. He was leadership on the ice in a lot of instances. When the team was really shit, he was never a complainer. He kind of was the focal point for a lot of our sports admiration. But he's just not quite good enough. He's a good player, but you kind of need to be... great. Yeah. So no, I don't. And that's such a great point, Matt. Like, it really is. Like, I think we all want that to be Auston Matthews.
We do.
We all want that. He doesn't seem to want it. And it's a little bit like when you like someone, but they don't like you back.
Oof. Those are, that's our,
it's been a long time, but boy, I don't
yeah,
that wasn't so good.
Those were tough. Let's see, that was like late 80s, early 90s. Maybe one time or two in the early 2000s as well. Tough times. Tough times. So, yeah, I mean, you wanted John Tavares to go from pajamas to the presser. You wanted that with Auston Matthews. I don't know if we're ever going to have that moment. That was my other thought while watching that presser.
And then it kind of went the opposite way with Mitch, where it felt like Mitch could have been that guy, local kid, high up on the all-time scoring list, super, super talented. And then he leaves and describes his time here as a dark, dark time. And you're like, oh, I guess the problem's me then.
Yeah, we don't need to go back onto that one.
It's a great question, and you kind of hope that Gavin McKenna is going to be that guy. I don't feel like he is, based on his personality. Matthew Schaefer feels like he could be that guy for the Islanders.
I don't know about McKenna. I've seen some interviews where he's, you know, at the very least, he's a saucy fella.
It's hard to say. He's like barely 18.
I know.
He's just a kid, so I don't want to make proclamations. I'm a little burned by this. It seems like we keep bringing in very talented people who decide it's easier to make a fortune somewhere else.
Well, I mean, that goes to the other topic. I remember, Cameron Gauntz, who's done a lot of work with TSN, former NHLer, he's great. And we were did the show with me on the Free Agent Frenzy Day. And I was discussing with him a little bit about all the American players who just want to run and hide. And they want to be unknown. And they want to be left alone. I'm like, guys, if you want that, you can't complain about your sport not getting more attention or more ratings. And you can't complain about your payroll in comparison with the other sports.
Because there's linkage
between
overall revenue made and the salary cap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it all goes hand in hand. And if you want everyone talking about you more, having a Canadian team winning a Stanley Cup would be so huge to ratings and to hockey-related revenue and all that sort of stuff. But they don't want it. They want jet skis, flip-flops, golf, and two reporters, one of them who's employed by the team. And by the way, I get that. That sounds awesome, but then you don't get the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have one without the other.
What was his response?
Oh, he agreed. And he actually does work. He used to do work with the union. And, you know, it's one of the first, and we talked about it. I'm hoping to get him on one day and just do a 2-hour show, him and I, middle of summer, no guests, and just bang out all the topics.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah.
I wonder to what extent the NHL is about to become a new NHL.
It already is. It's the first time where the off season was more interesting than the playoffs.
It's true.
And then, like, the hardcore hockey people are like, oh, no, the playoffs are great. I'm like, no. There was obviously some wonderful moments.
The playoffs are great while your team is in.
Yeah, and the moment they're out. And also, how interesting would the playoffs have been if Mitch Marner's team before Vegas was the Islanders? Mm. Do you think there'd be that much discussion about, oh, the reinvention and he's back? No. Now, the two biggest stories was Marner, and it was only Marner because he was in Toronto, and John Tortorella. Those are the two biggest stories in the NHL playoffs. It happens in sports. By the way, it wasn't a great NFL playoffs this year. It was kind of beyond Rams and Seahawks. It was kind of a dud of a playoffs. It happens. But the offseason for the NHL has actually been really interesting. I don't ever remember that in my life working in sports.
In general, the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs work in photo opposition to each other.
Correct.
Photo negatives of each other. Like the first round's the best round in the NHL, not so much in the NBA. But with each successive round in the NBA, the better teams make it through, and you wind up getting these colossal matchups. I don't know what it is about hockey, but it feels like it just peters out. And it could just be health. Frankly, it could just be that they're so freaking banged up by that fourth round, they can't play all out the way they do in the first two rounds. But generally speaking, I find like in the NHL, the best actual quote-unquote playoff round series is usually in the first two.
And by the way, there was almost no game sevens this year. It just happens. It's kind of a dud of the year. But the offseason's been great. and so many storylines and Leo Carlson.
Well, I was going to say the offer sheet. What really, I feel like there's a new NHL and we don't know what it's going to be just yet. We are in a transitional period. The old ownership, a league is the composite vision of the owners. They run the show, they hire the commissioner, they set the guidelines and the goals. They're the owners. That makes sense. I was thinking about this with a friend the other day, how the Chicago Blackhawks thing, where, you know, half the organization was found to be, you know, culpable of Kyle Beach and the whole...
Yes, just assault, sexual right. assault.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the way Gary protected the Blackhawks, I mean, he did and he didn't, but I don't think he was in a hurry to really put them to it. But yeah, that's largely because the Wirtz family was one of the classic hockey families that were part of his tenure. Jacobs family in Boston. Those families are kind of done. It feels almost like the second Godfather, where there are no five families anymore and things are back up for grabs. And the new owners are coming in and we don't know what kind of league they want yet. But the offer sheets, I think, is an indication that they're not looking for chums. They're looking for optimization of assets, and you've got 18 months to prove yourself or you're out.
And then on top of that, the salary cap. Like, the salary cap is now, we have passed the whole COVID era. It's done. And it's going up and it's spiking. And we've never had this before where all these teams have now so much more cap room. And now you can make these sort of offer sheets for Leo Carlson. And it's going to fuck with Anaheim's bottom pairing and depth and things.
And clearly
like that.
There was history there with the Cutter Gauthier thing between Anaheim and Philadelphia. Clearly Philadelphia and Danny Briere didn't hate the idea that they were either going to get the player or really stick it to the Ducks.
Yeah. So you have that. You have Dylan Larkin, Jason Robertson saying no to $100+ million from Seattle. Brady joining Matthew. What's going to happen with Morgan Riley? Like, there's just tons of off-season intrigue. This doesn't happen in hockey, and a lot of it has to do with now with the money, there's more opportunity for bigger transactions.
I also think like data expedites decisions without emotion. Look at the Vegas Golden Knights. They fire Bruce Cassidy, you know, a couple weeks before the playoffs. They bring in John Tortorella, who takes the team to the final.
Game six.
And then they let him go because they're going to go a different way. The new teams that are doing really well, you know, whether it's Carolina and Eric Tulsky or you know, the Golden Knights have had a nice run. But generally speaking, they're pretty merciless.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's good for us. And we're going to do this. And that's it.
If I was a budding NHL head coach, I would never buy a home.
Right.
I would never, ever invest in real estate because I'm getting fired. I'm getting fired real quick.
What's the over-under on Jim Hiller? What is it, a year and a half?
Well, let's see. The average is 2.4 years. That's it.
But in this market.
I think I had 2 years. I'll give him 2 years.
All right. I'm going to give it a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if they're not really good by halfway through the second year, he's out.
Oh, yeah. You know what? You're right. Because they gave all that money in term to Radish and the Bobrovsky deal. Yeah, 1.5.
One and a half tops.
Yeah.
Unless it really works. And that's why I would put the over-under there.
Yeah. And if it really works, 3.5.
Right.
Because it's the NHL. Everyone
the NHL has always been kind of chummy. And it's always been about, quote-unquote, maintaining relationships. And I don't think that that's going to be true in the future. And I don't know how that's going to play out. And the weird thing about this is hockey is built on dynamics. Maybe more than any other sport except for football, you have to be a team. If you're not a team, it doesn't work. And we see this all the time because 8 seeds beat 1 seeds. Why? They fucking tried harder. Like, that doesn't exist in other sports. But it does in hockey. It's a real thing. And if you make it, quote unquote, an emotionless business... How's that going to translate onto the ice? I don't know.
That's a great point. Just about because the organizations are becoming less emotional, but it's an emotional sport. And for it to work, for the team to bond, for a guy to take a puck off the face, he's got to love his teammates. And that's emotion. So how do those two worlds kind of sort of mesh together.
I think it works if you're a bit of an assassin, mm-hmm. where your goal, like a Jason Robertson, no one's looking at him and saying, well, he's the heart and soul that's going to bind this team. You say, no, he's the 40-plus goals. That's going to, and goals are still the most valuable thing you can do on the ice. So he's going to have value. But what we've learned from hockey over and over and over again is it's the Brad Marchands who get in there and make it like their job to raise everyone's floor.
There's a reason every year Corey Perry's in the Cup Final.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't win it usually, but every year there he is in the Cup Final.
It's the best players in the playoffs are the most talented with heart. The Chris Prongers, the Victor Hedmans. Like, these guys are obviously Hall of Fame talents.
Zdeno Chara.
You know, but in the end, they're also incredible competitors and very physical. So I guess the point, to go back to it, is just, if the new NHL is just mercenary, how do you tell someone, this world is mercenary, but we need everything you got?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're going to need you to play with that broken sternum and, you know, in game five of the second round of the playoffs.
That's a great way to put it, though. Seriously, like, what prevents you then from just being Darren Peterson saying, I got a bit of calf tightness?
He's looked good in the summer league so far.
Because he's an incredible talent.
Yeah.
But now he has to prove that you can win with him, because yeah. there's a lot of people who are pretty talented. And this is the hard thing for GMs. Everyone's like, oh, just draft for talent. I don't think people believe that anymore.
By the way, speaking of GMs and executives,
DeBanza looks pretty good too.
He does. Oh, no. I think DeBanza is going to be great based on two NCAA games I watched. So I know nothing. I feel bad for the hands, for the inside hands of every member of the Montreal Canadiens executive class, because they have been high-fiving each other so violently watching Leo Carlson getting $18 million. Their entire team is signed, all under 10. Their highest paid player is Noah Dobson. Like, I think all the agents for the Montreal Canadiens are motherfuckering it every day. I think the players are trying to, you know, convince themselves, you know, it's still good, it's still good, like Homer Simpson chasing the pig. But wow, if you are the executives from Montreal, you are loving the offer sheet.
As soon as the offer sheet story came out, I texted Strombo and I'm just like, Demidov deal looks pretty good now, eh, buddy?
Yeah. Oh, Strombo must be just fucking thrilled.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I've been working on that Crave series, right?
Yep.
So I felt kind of close to this team because I've been watching them develop from shit to where they are now.
Yeah.
And they really have done an incredible job, Gorton and Kent Hughes have, of fostering an organization that has like a program. It feels like it means something to be a Canadian. Here's how we do things. With cutthroat economics. And everybody's bought in because mm-hmm. they all like each other. And I think probably the unsung hero in all this is Marty St. Louis. They seem to want to play for him. And they seem to want to play there for him.
Toronto's got to do something. They got to plant a controversy. Something about Anglo-Franco relations. I don't care. We got to do something.
It's interesting because a buddy of mine, I know where you're going with this, which yeah. is how do we cheer for the Habs as Leafs fans? But someone said to me, how do you feel about Alfie coming in, right? Daniel Alfredson, hired associate coach. And I said, I don't love it. However, it speaks to the fact that I don't see the Leafs' main rivals as other Canadian teams anymore.
Mm.
I see them as the American teams that I think are fucking with the sport. Tampa, Florida.
Dallas.
Minnesota,
yeah.
You know, that to me, and even though we don't play them as much, we don't have that proximity. You don't go just down to the QEW or up the 401 to Ottawa. I'm kind of rooting for Ottawa because I want to see a Canadian team do it. I'm definitely rooting for the Canadians.
Oh, I've said it on my show. I am rooting for a Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup, because when all the players see the glory and the joy and the happy going on in whichever Canadian city, maybe the next time a player is getting their no trade clause list of teams, maybe they don't immediately just throw every Canadian team on it.
We talked a little bit about where are we at in sports in 2026, and probably the biggest single sports story was the Olympics and losing the Canadian team, losing the gold in men's and women's to the Americans. And it feels like the great state of hockey has flipped over to the U.S., that they're in charge right now. They're the reigning champs. And I find it hard to root against other Canadian teams at the, in praise of the Americans. First of all, they don't need it. They're doing fine. Second of all, they kind of whizzed all over us. Like, they kind of humiliated us. And I'm not just talking on the ice. I mean, even just with the attitude, with the fuck Canada kind of stuff. You know, so I'm okay with Daniel Alfredsson if that helps the Leafs win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's it.
And listen, I also loved it because, again, you know, a little lighter content. You know, the Alfredsson gave us something to talk about. It's funny. No associate or assistant coach. I'm still fuzzy of the difference. No associate or assistant coach in the NHL is going to have nearly the same amount of media requests, interview, things written about him than Daniel Alfredsson going to Toronto.
He's a really great guy. I remember meeting him when we were in Ottawa one time, the All-Star game years ago. And I just thought, man, he's so classy. There was something about, like, there was a kind of a Swedish player dignity to him. You see it with Mats. You see it with the Sedins. Like, these guys don't act like chumps. I'm not going to name the player, but I was at a bar that night and I watched him take off his shirt and like pour beer all over himself and dance. You know, you're not going to see, you know, Daniel Alfredsson doing that.
Oh, Keith Tkachuk.
If it was him, I would have said it.
Yeah, I know. I know. Also, they age well. It's too bad the word Sweden doesn't rhyme with crack, because Sweden don't crack.
Okay, Sweden bleed, but that doesn't work.
No, that doesn't work at all.
Swede don't need?
Something there.
There's something there. I'm going to work on that because,
yeah.
God, it's like they're so beautiful.
They are.
This new guy from Norway, this Viking god.
Erling Haaland, yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he looks very different than a lot of the other World Cup stars, just because he's giant. Like, usually guys aren't that big.
Messi looks like a gym teacher.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, this guy looks like a Norse god.
Yeah, he looks like a Norse god. Messi looks like he's going to get a whistle and call the men ladies. Like, that's what. By the way, I found the best way to describe Messi. Lionel Messi, I'm an idiot. He 70% of the time, he plays like Phil Kessel. He's just sort of gliding around, not doing much, not burning any calories, just out on the outskirts. And then when he sees the space, he becomes Connor McDavid. That's who Messi is on the pitch. I threw that by all the hardcore hot soccer people or football, and they all agree with me. So they like that analogy for Messi.
I love that. That's great. I remember hearing a story about Phil Kessel, how there were nights where he would skate back to the bench and say to the guys, "Don't have it tonight, guys. Sorry." It's like, it's the first period. We've got to play 45 more minutes.
It's weird. Like, Kessel, in a sport where it's all demanding sacrifice and toughness and you got to run through a wall, everyone seemed to be okay with that with Phil. How did he get away with it?
But the weird thing is, everyone also said the best athlete on any team that he was on was Phil Kessel. And nobody looked like, you want to talk about the guy, like, he looks like the janitor at the school that Lionel Messi is the gym teacher at. Perplexing, but go figure. So where are you at with the Leafs, where they are now? We assume there are no really big moves yet to come.
Okay, here's why I'm with the Leafs. I thank God for the last month because it's become relevant.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. They had 78 points last year. 99 got Ottawa in as the eighth spot. Washington missed the playoffs, vastly improved. Florida missed the playoffs, vastly improved. Toronto needs to pick up 20-plus points from last year, and they're going to have to fight off Washington and Florida. I think Ottawa takes a step back. But at the very least, the Leafs are relevant. I couldn't have given a sweet shit about that team at the end of the season. And then all the things about, fired Treliving. When are they going to fire the coach? Oh, they fired the coach. Chyka, really? That guy? All right. But, you know, Radish, McKenna, Bobrovsky. There was talk they could have gotten Zakarinski. At the very least, the Leafs have become relevant.
Yeah, they're in on things.
They're in on things, and they just matter. And it might not matter by the end of the year, and they may miss the playoffs, but at least for the next little bit, they're a relevant conversation. And that's a lot more than we could say them. They ended the year with 7 straight losses, losing their final game to Daniel Alfredsson's Ottawa Senators.
It's hard to imagine that they won't improve, but that's damning with faint praise because they stunk. And it was the back end of the worst single season drop off in franchise history. So better is almost impossible not to achieve. I got my doubts. You know, you get over the excitement of the first couple of days of free agency where you're kind of in a, you know, you're in a bit of a high.
Yeah, it's a honeymoon trades. Yeah.
Yeah, you're in, it's a refractory period, and then it fades off. As it always does, and then you go quickly to ESPN.
Yep, that's right.
That was always your theory. First website after porn is ESPN.
I've always wanted to know what's the number one website and I'm going to say more men than women. What website do they shamefully scurry to after the pornography? I like to call it the pornography. And is it always ESPN? After they're done with the cuck videos. Just a little.
I was going to say it's been that kind of show, eh?
A little callback there.
It's summer. It's hot out. What are you going to do? You know, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that the team is not irrelevant. But I also think, you know this, I've talked about this a million times. I don't know that this is the right course of action. It is the course of action they're taking. The wild card in all of this probably is Bobrovsky more than anything else. If he goes back to being really good, they could make the playoffs. Because so-so teams with great goaltending make playoffs all the time.
Here's the path for the Maple Leafs. And this is a reasonable one. Auston Matthews isn't 22nd in goals per 60 minutes. Mm-hmm. Let's get that back up again. Bobrovsky, 50 games. Mm-hmm. Give us 50 really solid games. Chris Tanev, you don't need to play 75 like you did 2 years ago, but you got to play more than 11. And then Jim Hiller, could you make sure the Leafs aren't last in time spent in the other team's offensive zone? Those are the four things. You do those four things, the Leafs can make the playoffs.
I'm going to add one thing, and it's not to make the playoffs, but it's what I want to see next year. And kind of what I don't want to see is a better way to put it. I don't want to see them ruin Gavin McKenna with expectations.
I don't think that's going to happen.
He's small.
Mm-hmm.
He's not faced anything close to this level of competition before. Auston Matthews came in and was dynamic right out of the gate. Auston Matthews is 6'3" and was playing in Europe against men.
I think most fans and the media knows this. We all know.
Everybody says that now.
Yeah.
But wait till they're 4-5-1 mm-hmm. after 10 games and he has 3 points, a goal and 2 assists. Is everyone going to be like, oh, we just got to be patient with this guy then?
I think people will. I'm going to give fans more credit.
There's no fucking way.
I think it's going to be different.
We're talking about putting a guy on the first line and mm-hmm. how he's going to help turn Auston Matthews' career around. He's a kid.
He is a kid. And here's what I'm hoping for him. Can he be better than Mikhail Grabowski? As a rookie, Grabowski had 48 points. I don't expect Gavin McKenna to have Mitch Marner's rookie season, 61 points. Can he be better than Grabowski? I don't need him to be better than Mitch Marner.
He's not getting the year of prep that those players had. If he went to the AHL, the way all these other guys do, or play in some other comparable league, he hasn't had the reps to come in and play against men at this level on a first line with the expectations that he's going to turn Auston Matthews' career around somehow. I've seen this market my whole life. The only thing we can say is thank God this guy's not a defenseman because we destroy them better than anything else. You know, people are so panicked about the team not making the playoffs that if it's not a strong start, I don't think he's going to be the first person people blame. I want him left out of this entirely, and I'm not sure he will be.
I'm going to say that a lot of the fan base is realizing, these hockey players, they're more sensitive because social media versus 90s and 2000s. I think a lot of Leaf fans are going to treat McKenna when you are hiking and you see a deer. And it's like, oh, got to be quiet. Got to be, don't make any sudden noises. We don't want to scare it off. I think there's going to be more of that.
You know, you make a great point because there's 5 or 6 targets that feel more natural before we get to him.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm just being unnecessarily concerned.
Well, it's being based on what we've seen in the past. You know, there's a reason for it. I'm just going to, maybe it's a sunny day and I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to humanity that it's going to be better for Gavin McKenna.
So the World Cup was fun until Trump got involved and exposed FIFA's enormous corruption.
They didn't expose it. We all knew how it...
No, I know. Yet again is what I said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But listen, then Belgium won 4-1 and they were making fun of Trump and they were doing the Trump dance and all that.
And then Trump promised to get the DOJ to investigate them
yeah.
to see, because some of them didn't look, wink, wink, Belgian to him.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. That's a good thing Trump said, you know, these are the important issues.
Do you know what the problem with that is, though? Mm. Honestly, like, you're right. But then when people say, oh, the Argentina game was fixed and there was no way they weren't going to overturn that goal against Egypt because they want Messi to go through. It's a better money-making story. And I don't think that's true. I think there are close calls that go one way or the other all the time in sports. But when there is corruption, anything that looks like corruption could be corruption.
The FIFA will never get the benefit of the doubt.
Never.
And they don't deserve it.
No.
They do not deserve it. They make the IOC and the NCAA look like PETA. They make it look like Doctors PETA Without Borders.
And Greenpeace.
Yeah, like just wrap them all into one.
All right, we got to go soon, but what does it say that we talked about all this and didn't bring up the Jays once?
Funny thing enough, I was going to mention that, and I'm fine without it. By the way, here's how you know that maybe sports fans aren't as bad as people say. It's only been recently that people are starting to be upset with Vlad. Everyone's given him a long rope because of what he has been. It's not like everyone was shitting on him in the first month and a half. I will only say this about the Blue Jays. The Vladimir Guerrero Jr. season is one of the single most confusing seasons in sports that I can think of because he has been bad. He hasn't been average. He's been bad. And he was the best player at the highest moment of pressure. All the playoffs last year. And he's not old like George Springer. He's not injured like Addison Barger. He's been there every day. And he's been the 10th best first baseman in the American League. And I have no one's given me an answer to that. Why has he been so bad that I'm satisfied with?
I just had a thought while you were talking. By the way, I love what you just said. That's exactly true. Baseball is so psychological and so weird. It's like every player in your starting nine is a goalie. You just have no idea, or is a kicker. It's just, you look at them and there are times someone goes like 5 for 55.
Mm-hmm.
Why? There's no apparent reason. They were good and then all of a sudden they suck. This happens all the time. Like, every player goes through droughts,
of course,
you know, but they're not as pronounced as they are in baseball, and they're not as continuous, like this flip-flopping back and forth and back and forth. There are very few players you look at and you go, you know what? They're going to give me 275 at the plate almost every month.
Find me an example. And I asked Buster Olney of this.
Yeah.
And the player he brought up was from the 70s.
And who was it?
It was
Rod Carew?
It was now as a pitcher, I forget, who was great in the playoffs and was doing morning radio. You don't remember a thing after 9:55. But just the profile, find me a guy who is in his mid-20s. Who was the undisputed best player in the playoffs and the very next year is fully healthy and isn't very good. Like, there, that doesn't profile. You don't have that. And that's what's going on with Vlad.
Well, this is extraordinary. This is like a quadruple goalie.
Mm-hmm.
The psychological confusion of it.
Like, imagine, like, after one of the Super Bowls with Mahomes, the next year he looked like Rex Grossman. You know, like that's what's happening.
It's not even the yips, because it's not like he's even not making contact.
I don't have an answer. I got literally...
Like, the yips is, I literally can't do this anymore. Like, mm-hmm. Chuck Knobloch all of a sudden can't throw to first base.
Yeah, Rick Ankiel, things like that.
Just happen. It's like he was great at this, and then he forgot how to do it well.
Maybe the closest, Jordan Spieth at like the 2016 Masters, where he had like a 3-4-5 shot lead on Sunday. And then on the back, like the last 10, 11 holes, just double bogey, triple bogey, and just all went away. That's one example.
It's a great observation, but the problem with that one is that's pressure, which is understandable. This was happening in April and May with a team there was no pressure on
none.
This guy. And the Leafs were embroiled in all kinds of stuff. It's not like they had this wild, rabid fan base that was staring at everything they were doing. They were under cloak of darkness. They were coming off an incredible playoff run. The team was largely brought back. There's just nothing but good vibes. And it hasn't clicked.
No idea.
No. And the thing that I find interesting about it is... really smart people don't have an idea. Like the Buster Olneys of the world, who's been watching this game for 60 years and is one of the world's leading authorities on the game. And you throw it out to him and he goes, I don't know.
Same thing. Keegan Mathison. I don't know. Like, just no one. Steve Phillips. Like, doesn't matter who you ask from whatever perspective. Everyone gives a clever 49-second soundbite that is distilled into, I don't know. And that's it.
By the way, you know what's one of the great phrases in the world? Je ne sais quoi. What does it mean? I don't know. But it sounds so smart.
Yeah.
It's the smartest way to say I'm dumb. Je ne sais quoi.
As we end this, should give a shout out to our sponsor, Jeff Pollock. That's Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com.
How much time do we have?
Because
I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow your mind.
We got 2 minutes, Bob.
He and I are doing boxer size together.
Are you really?
Yeah, we're about to start. He's been doing it and he invited me and we haven't been able to sync up our calendars. But in 2 weeks' time, I'm going to be in a boxer size class with Jeff.
So, no driver's license, but boxer size.
You know what? I'm a nice bunch of guys.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.